Rounding the corner into March means decision time for key legislation in Des Moines. Will majority Republicans advance social issue bills and massive tax cuts? We dive deeper on this Reporters Roundtable edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart.
I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating more than 40 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is the Friday, March 2 edition of Iowa Press. Here is David Yepsen.
Legislative funnels have a way of refocusing the Iowa legislature on issues more likely to reach final passage. But this year, a handful of previously unattainable Republican priorities are still hanging in the balance. Among them, massive tax overhauls and one of the most conservative restrictions on abortion. For an update on those and other political developments, we've gathered an Iowa Press roundtable for a reporter insight. Jason Noble is chief political reporter for the Des Moines Register. James Lynch writes for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids. Kathy Obradovich is political columnist for the Des Moines Register. And Kay Henderson is news director at Radio Iowa. Well, good to see you all. You're surviving the session well, I see. I want to talk about the tax bill first, and I'd like each of you to weigh in a little bit. Kay, where does the tax legislation stand now?
Well, in total, Senate Republicans have proposed a $4 billion tax cut over 6 years. Governor Reynolds has proposed a $1.7 billion tax cut over 6 years. House Republicans are working from her tax plan as a template. Some might suggest that the Senate plan might be a Trojan horse because it is so massive and so comprehensive, addressing all sorts of tax cuts. You have Republicans in the Senate describing theirs as bold. You have the Speaker of the House, a Republican, describing the governor's plan as prudent. So that sort of lends itself to that whole Trojan horse mantra.
Kathy, what's your take on this bill and how, where it's headed and what it does?
Yeah, so the interesting thing is that the legislature has not even settled its budget for the current year that we're already in. There's only 4 months left in the fiscal year. They haven't figured out what the budget is for that year. And now they're talking in the Senate bill about taking $200 million out of the budget for next year. And they really resisted Democrats' efforts on the floor to draw them out on how are they going to balance the budget if this tax cut gets passed. So that I thought that was an interesting point. The other interesting point I thought was that the least controversial part of this whole tax bill was eliminating the federal tax deduction from Iowa's tax returns. You guys probably remember some of this. There were practically riots at the State House when Governor Terry Branstad considered that just, you know, really a decade, 15 years ago. There was a public hearing where the Speaker of the House threw out the public because it got too rowdy over this one issue. Now nobody cares. Nobody is raising any objection to that now.
Well, I mean, Republicans say they don't want to see Iowans' taxes go up as a result of federal tax changes. When you look at this debate, I mean, everybody's talking about the big numbers, $1.7 billion, $4 billion. But in the end, we might end up with just getting rid of federal deductibility, tinkering with coupling with the federal tax code. And that might be all they can agree on in the end.
Because the compromises that have to
right.
come out. Right.
The House Republicans and Senate Republicans don't seem to be on the same page at all. The governor's plan is much more prudent or practical than the Senate plan. And Democrats seem to agree with getting rid of federal deductibility. But beyond that, there's not much agreement.
Jason, there's a lot in this bill. What's your take on this tax legislation?
Well, you know, the Republicans control both chambers of the legislature and the governor's office.
they are fiscal conservatives. This is something that they feel like they have to be talking about and be showing their constituents that they're serious about, cutting their taxes. And so, like we've been saying, this Senate bill is very wide-ranging. It would be represent a big hit to the state budget. And even the governor's tax bill is a pretty big hit to state revenues. I go back to what James said. You know, the baseline here is they've got to do something to offset the tax increase that could be facing Iowans because of deductibility and the federal tax reform, and that might be at the end of the day what they can agree on.
But Jason, you mentioned Republicans control thing. They've got the trifecta. That doesn't happen very often. I've been impressed by the Republican discipline on issues that they have long been favored in this state. They're going to go in. They're going to get it done. And this tax bill strikes me as the very same thing. To them, it's not a hit to the Treasury. It's a savings to the taxpayer.
Well, sure. But, you know, we've had some budget issues over the last few months, and there's been the demand for cuts. And it feels like even those modest cuts have been a real challenge and a real tough debate in the legislature about how to reduce state spending. How do you do that and then put on top of that $1 billion in a year? They're going to have to answer for that at some point.
Even when Republicans control everything, you know how it works up there. You've got Republicans in control of the House and the Senate and the governor's office, but you end up with these rivalries that pop up, like between the House and the Senate, which we're seeing on this tax bill, or the House and the Senate versus the governor, which may pop up on some of these issues as well. They often moderate themselves, even though they control all three chambers, because they can't agree among themselves. And this tax bill may be a good example of that.
Exactly. If you remember a year ago, Bill Dix came in as majority leader and said, we're going to kick in the door. You talk about both chambers being run by conservatives. The difference, I think, is that the senators see themselves as bold conservatives. They talk about this bold tax plan. And in the House, they talk about practical and what they can do without upsetting the apple cart. I mean, there's a difference in the way they look at this. They'll all say they're conservatives, but there's a real difference in their approach. And we're going to see that continue to play out for the next month or two.
And the one thing to look at here is how the governor asserts herself into this debate. Does she say, okay, the buck stops with me, and this is the bill I want to sign? She has not done that yet.
Historically, when I've seen these fights in the legislature in the past, House, Senate, governor, the governor usually gets what he or she wants, because they're the only person that puts all the pieces together. Mm-hmm. And so do we look at this bill and say, we really ought to pay attention to what Governor Reynolds has proposed, because that's going to ultimately be the compromise and the default position? Is that your impressions?
I think so, especially when you're looking at some of the individual pieces here. You know, this Senate bill has some corporate income tax cuts. That's not in the governor's bill. She sort of went out of her way during her condition of the state speech to say, I'm not interested in corporate tax cuts this year. I think on those kind of details, her leadership and her preference and her being sort of in tune to what the politics of this election year are.
But, James, whether you like it or not, this really is an historic piece of legislation.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And one of the things that makes it difficult that I think Jason was talking about is that, you know, there are things in here like the taxes on credit unions and banks. That's a huge issue in itself. And to throw that into this tax bill complicates a tax cut.
Yeah,
I don't think the House is interested in taking that issue on as part of tax relief.
The Senate also took out a major piece that would expand sales tax revenue on digital products like your Netflix account or your movie streaming account, and also for these internet app-based rides like Lyft or Uber, and expanding sales tax to that. That's like a $24 million issue right there. And the Senate decided not to include that in their tax bill that passed. It will be interested to see, because the governor was interested in that part. We'll see if the House takes that part up. That's, you know, offsetting a billion-dollar tax bill, it's like $24 million a year.
But the messaging among Republicans is this is Main Street versus Internet. And so the way they couch that in the House is that, you know, we're looking out for those hardworking people on your main streets, the retailers who are losing sales to all of these online retailers.
We got lots more issues. I want to go to fetal heartbeat, abortion ban. James, where does that issue stand now?
It passed the Senate. It would ban abortions after 6 weeks. If you remember, the House passed a ban on abortions after 20 weeks last year, but didn't have the votes to pass a fetal heartbeat bill last year. When we talk to leaders in the House, they're very, wait and see. We'll have to see where the caucus is. We're a pro-life caucus, but we have to wait and see where the caucus is. This bill is getting some pushback. For example, the Catholic bishops are not supporting it. They're not opposing it, but they're not supporting it because of the Catholic Church position that life begins at conception, not in 6 weeks. A life is a life, and they believe it should be protected.
And the other
so
thing that
there's going to be some interesting divisions on this bill.
Well, the University of Iowa says they'll lose their accreditation for their medical school if this bill passes.
Right. The other thing about this bill is it negates that 20-week ban that is current law. And the Catholic Church, among others, argue that that's one reason why they don't want this to become law, because an already existing law that hasn't gotten a constitutional challenge in court is working. Whereas if this 6-week ban goes into effect, I think all parties agree that this is going to go to court.
Kathy, so is this just a bone that Republicans are throwing to their base?
Yeah, well, I mean, yes. This is very, very popular with the base. And, this is something that, in fact, this issue and the personhood issue, which would take this back to the moment of conception, it had actually complicated their ability to do anything on abortion because they wanted to do what was constitutional. Linda Utmeyer, the Speaker of the House, was reluctant to bring this bill up, not just because she didn't have the votes, but because she didn't want to spend a lot of time on a divisive issue that was just going to be essentially knocking on the courthouse door because it's unconstitutional.
Well, that debate, Kathy, was pretty spirited in the Senate.
Yeah, and what we saw, well, it was brief. It was actually a lot briefer than I was expecting. But what we saw was Democrats actually trying to make the case overall that Republicans are have a war on women, which we have seen that rhetoric before. And one thing they did that I don't think the Republicans were expecting was they brought in the sexual harassment lawsuit that Senate Republicans lost, the $1.75 million lawsuit, and added that on to the pile of things that they were doing that were unfavorable for women. Republican staffers sitting on the side of the room that I was on actually gasped when that came up. So I think we can see where they're headed with this, and it'll be played out on the campaign trail.
Republicans better get used to this. I think Democrats are going to be keeping it alive until
yes, I think
November.
So.
Uh-huh. Kay, Kathy mentioned Speaker Utmeyer's role.
Right.
It's interesting to me. She's playing a role in the abortion debate. She's a nurse behind the scenes. She's playing a role in that tax debate. Is Linda Utmeyer emerging as the real power broker at the State House?
Definitely. She is, for all purposes, the top Republican in the legislature. And this tax bill gives her an opportunity to work with Governor Reynolds in a way that they haven't before. Sometimes they've been behind the scenes at loggerheads. She is now advancing the governor's agenda on taxes in the House. And it calls into sort of full relief the tension between the House, which has what you might say is a mature majority. They've been there, done that. When Republicans took the House first and Democrats still held the Senate, they passed all these tax cuts, knowing that it would never go anywhere in the Senate. Now you have this ambitious, new, energetic Senate majority among Republicans, and they're doing the things that sort of the House Republicans got out of their system a few years ago.
Jason? And I would add on to that, that the House Republicans are the ones who might be a little more endangered in this election mm-hmm. cycle. We'll talk about the politics in a few minutes here, I think, but the Senate at this point appears to be sort of more secure in its majority in the 2018 cycle than the House does, and that might make the House want to moderate a little bit.
James, Speaker Utmeyer. Moderating influence?
I think
powerful.
So. I think so. And it goes back to kind of the mature majority. She's been around there. You know, her father was a legislator. She knows the process. She knows how to work these issues. But a week or so ago, we were talking to her and talking, just sort of kibitzing about deal making. And she made this comment that really struck me about who's making deals. I'm not making deals. Who's making deals around here? And it wasn't clear whether it was like, we don't do that anymore, or it just doesn't happen anymore. The tribes don't make deals.
And that was really evident when you looked at some of the debate in the Senate this past week on some even minuscule pieces of legislation, that there is a huge schism between Democrats and Republicans, and it's very rare that you see them work in a bipartisan fashion on some of the big issues that face the state.
One of the things that has struck me this year is how in line Linda Utmeyer's rhetoric has been with the governor's rhetoric. On this tax bill, you talk about the sustainability is the catchphrase that they're both using. We saw that on the water quality issue earlier this year, where we're talking about this being a generational issue and something that they have to keep working on. They are in line with their messaging right now. And we'll see if that continues as they have to start making deals at the end of the session, and there may be some conflicts. Right now, they're on the same page.
But Linda Utmeyer has shown she is willing to defend her majority, even if it means throwing other people under the bus. Well, in regards to this tax bill, they're going at it at a slow pace, right, in direct contrast to what Senate Republicans did.
Kathy, is that working with the governor, are we seeing that work in the budget? What's happened to the budget? I mean, we were talking about all these other issues, and a while back, not too long ago, we were talking about all these dire budget things that had to be done
in the current fiscal year. Pressed the pause button on the budget. I mean, we thought, I think probably most of us thought that the first thing they did when they came into session would be to cut the current year's budget because revenues were coming in slower than expected. They still haven't even done that. There's only 4 months left in the current budget year. Now it looks like they have waited long enough that they might as well just wait until the next revenue estimate comes in March. There's a buzz in the State House that Republican leaders think that they're going to get a boost in revenue. It might make some of the pain from those budget cuts go away at the time when they really want to be debating is really fun stuff like massive tax cuts.
Well, as Lily Tomlin said, never mind.
Never mind.
Jason, another big story in the last week was the ranking by U.S. News and World Report that Iowa's number one,
yeah,
among all this. Everybody loves to see that. But sometimes I wonder, you look at other states and they've got nothing to brag about. I wonder if being number one in a survey like that is a little bit like being best dressed at a hobo convention.
Well, you know, everyone loves a list. It's in the newsroom, we call that a talker. You know, everyone's, you know, the governor was on national TV this week talking about it. I don't know what it tells us really about this political moment. You know, that this is based on a bunch of metrics and data that might be data from 2014 or 2015.
It's got to be a big help to Governor Reynolds and all incumbents, really, to have that kind of...
Well, the question is, do Iowans feel like... do they feel like they're number one in the country? And, you know, yeah, the governor who wants to run this campaign of optimism and things are really bright for Iowa wants to talk about this. And Democrats want to say, well, look at Medicaid, look at mental health, look at education. Things are bad. The question is going to be, how are Iowans feeling? And do they feel like they're number one or do they feel like they need to change?
James, does this make it difficult for people who want change in Iowa to get that change? Do Iowans become more complacent? I remember covering Lamar Alexander when he was running for president. And he said, you know, it's tougher for Terry Branstad to get an education reform bill than it is for me to get one in Tennessee. In Tennessee, everybody knows the schools are a mess. In Iowa, that's not true. So is this going to make us more complacent as a state?
On some issues, it might. On other issues, mental health is one that comes to mind, that there's broad agreement that change has to happen. And we saw that this week in the Iowa House, where they voted unanimously to approve a mental health legislation. On some other issues, it might make us more complacent. Although when I look at these rankings, there's things like roads and bridges was rated high. And just remember, a couple years ago, you know, school buses were going to fall through bridges and things like that. So I guess that 10-cent hike in gas taxes is paying off. They looked at commute times. Well, I mean, commute times in Iowa is a non-factor. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to put a lot of stock in it.
People forget that there's a list for anything you want to show, right? There are lists out there, and I remember years when one party was touting one set of lists and another party was touting another set of lists that showed it backed up their political positions. You know, Iowa is number one, but the next list is coming along, right? And we will all duly write about it. it, and whoever created the list will get all the clicks on their website. I just don't put that much
right, and
stock
we can
in.
All every t- the next time any of us hit a pothole, yes, we'll remember that our infrastructure is number one. Jason, I want to move along here. Guns is a huge issue in the country right now. Is there anything moving on that in the legislature that you know of?
No, I don't get the sense that we're going to see any substantive movement on guns at the state level. I mean, this is something that the governor brought up when she was on CBS this morning earlier this week. She said she was open to a discussion. I don't know how substantive that's really going to be.
The one thing that is moving is the constitutional amendment to put basically Second Amendment language into the state constitution. The other big issue this year was the constitutional carry, that you wouldn't need a permit to carry a gun. That died a few days after the Parkland shooting. The Senate dropped that bill. And that seems to be about the only gun legislation that's moving at all this year, is the constitutional amendment.
But which is liberalizing gun laws rather than restricting
right,
them.
Yeah.
But the governor this week convened a meeting of top officials in the education area and in the public safety areas of state government to say, hey, let's review school safety issues and make some recommendations. There's already a bill in the Senate that will require all schools to have an active shooter plan. 15% of schools do not today, so that is something that may happen. And also, there's now starting to be a discussion about these sort of red flag laws that are in force in other states. The governor has indicated to us in an interview in her office here in Des Moines that she would consider that if there are due process safeguards written into that piece of legislation.
Keep in mind that just last year, Iowa passed a massive legislation that loosened a ton of gun restrictions. So it's not like they haven't been doing anything on guns. This would have, what the proposals were this year, were to take that, and make Iowa one of the most gun-friendly states in the country, even though Iowa's already very gun friendly. So I think that these discussions probably may simmer on into the next legislative session.
Well, they're always campaign issues.
Sure.
I mean, gun rights, it's a good campaign issue.
Always too many issues and not enough time. Kathy, one thing that has been moving along, not a lot of controversy, has been mental health. You've written a great deal about that issue. Where does that issue stand up in the legislature?
Yeah, so I went to a news conference this week about mental health, and the advocates who have been, toiling in the trenches for years and years and years without much say that this is a watershed year for mental health at the legislature. There was a high-profile case of somebody that we all know who lost their teenage son to suicide, wrote a moving obituary. The Register picked up that story and had a gubernatorial candidate forum in December on mental health. A lot of interest groups like the Hospital Association, the Nurses Association, the counties all made mental health their top priority. So definitely, and then the governor said this is going to be one of her priorities. The bill that's moving now is the result of recommendations of a task force that had been working for a couple of years, trying to get people who need critical care or subcritical care into beds. We have a shortage of beds. So those kinds of things are, it's a significant piece of legislation.
Okay, we've got less than 2 minutes.
Okay.
One hot issue, traffic cameras. What are we doing in Iowa, if anything, about traffic tickets written by TV cameras?
Well, the legislature might ban them, and they might just regulate them more. The Senate has passed a bill this year that would ban them. The Senate last year passed a bill that would just regulate them. It's now on the House to decide which way this conversation is directed.
Never an official Iowa Press show unless we talk politics. Jason, the filing period is coming up for candidates to run. It's open now. A lot of talk about a Democratic wave in Congress. Could there be a Democratic wave in the Iowa legislature?
Possibly. I think that the House has a better shot at seeing some real movement rather than the Senate, just kind of the way the map is drawn. I think the area to really focus on are the suburbs of Des Moines and Cedar Rapids. We just had news this week that Chris Hagenow, the number two Republican in the state House, is moving from his very competitive sort of inner suburban seat to a more exurban seat in Dallas County. Maybe a signal there that they're looking at some competitive races in the suburbs.
And Kay, we have a new agriculture secretary in.
Yes, and he has indicated that he will seek the office for good, and he will face a primary of as many as five competitors. So that race may be decided, the Republican nominee for the 2018 ticket may be decided at convention, as will some of these other massively crowded primary races.
Okay. Well, always too much to talk about, never enough time. We'll be back. Thanks to all of you for taking time to be here. Before we go, our IPTV family acknowledges the passing of a dear friend, colleague, and leader. Dan Miller spent 37 years as Iowa Public Television executive producer of public affairs, programming director, and general manager. Dan passed away this week at the age of 66. Now, we'll revisit Dan's legacy in the coming weeks on Iowa Public Television, but we'd be remiss not to mention it now. Dan's work touched not only Iowa Press, but every program this network aired across the majority of its half-century existence. Dan Miller was a cornerstone of IPTV, one strong enough for the rest of us to stand on for many years to come. All Iowans are better off because of Dan's leadership and vision.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart. I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.